Hello and welcome to India Career Center, the one-stop podcast for students, professionals, parents, and guardians. In every episode, we will try to deal with a current topic that needs expert advice related to career, career guidance, and career mentoring. Please welcome your host, Dr. S.B. Mishra, to the show. And happy listening.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode on India Career Center. I think we keep hearing about this concept of 21st century skills. And out of that, critical thinking is one of the main skills of 21st century. We will be today talking about this particular subject in more detail. And to do that, we've got a fantastic guest today, Dr. Trista Ramurthy, who is the Vice President of the CMR Group of Institutions. She's also the founder of Akia Schools and the Provost of the CMR University, Bangalore. CMR Group is basically an educational conglomerate established in 1991 in Bangalore with nearly 20,000 students from Montessori to postdoctoral scholars. Dr. Trista, thank you very much for being part of our conversation today.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Great. And as I mentioned earlier, your profile is so illustrious that if I just read it, it will sound too boring. So I would rather like to start our conversation by requesting you to take us through your life journey so far, starting from your early life in India and your higher education abroad, and what really brought you to this this education line. Take us through your personal life.
Sure, Mishraji, thank you so much for having me, and you've got me here to talk about my favorite topic, so I'm really excited. I'm a hardcore Bangalore girl. I grew up in Bangalore, and when I was about 5, my mother started a school with about 6 children in our family orchard, named after my father, my grandfather, her father-in-law. And so I saw my mother, you know, build these institutions, and I would accompany her over summer break. And I would always feel like, you know, I want to be a teacher also. I want to be in the school and in colleges. And I that's the work that I want to do. And I knew from a very young age, I wanted to be an educator. So I did my undergraduate in Singapore and my master's in education from the US and my doctorate in education from the UK. And I can say I've tested all the different types of education systems. I returned to India in 2008 and I began my own chain of schools called Akia. We bring pedagogically sound and research-based approaches to the K-12 sector. And our group also runs a university, the CMR University, established by the State Act in 2013. So I've spent my time since 2008 really working in the education space in Bangalore and building something of value and creating something that today's day and age needs. So I have not used all my titles of which university where, but I really believe I'm a student of so many systems and learned from so many teachers and so many pedagogies and approaches to learning. And I try to bring all of that to my work here at CMR.
Fantastic. And it's great to, as you mentioned rightly, to get exposed to what you love to do from very early in life, fortunately, because of your family setting, because of your mother, as you mentioned, and also the exposure to various international curriculum in terms of, you mentioned about Singapore, UK, and US. So in terms of the approach, were they different from each other? How different they were each other? Or was it something to do with because of the various levels at which you studied in those education systems, they follow different approaches? What is your personal journey in that?
I think all of those approaches were very different from each other. because they're very culturally contextualized. Singapore is very hardworking, very structured, very diligent in their approach. So that's how the culture of the university that I went to, Singapore Management University, and sort of the output and the wiring that happened there. In the US, I went to Stanford, which was in the Bay Area and really the center of all innovation in the US, whether it be tech or any other field. So the culture of Stanford was laid back, but high bar of excellence and want to make a difference in the world and contribute and build something and create something new. And so that sort of wiring also took place. And the UK was my doctorate in education. I think the British system is very detail-oriented and very systematic and committed to the purpose of what it was intended. So doing a doctorate there was very rigorous, and I learned a lot about just research methodologies and that approach. And so each of them have brought something in, and I guess none of them can be taken in its entirety into India. India is a completely different mindset, ethos, structure. So how do you take the best and how do you learn from all of those and bring them to India?
Now, let us dive into the subject for which we came together today. You are so fascinated about this concept of design thinking. Honestly, till the time I got connected with you, I was also not very aware of this particular subject. But give a sense of what exactly this concept is, because I'm sure a lot of our listeners and viewers probably are not exposed to this particular concept so much. So if you can give us the concept detail.
So Mishraji, in terms of design thinking, I think a lot of people would have heard a lot of versions of this word being used in multiple contexts and has become more and more popular. The way we look at design thinking is it's a problem-solving approach, a problem-solving framework. And how do we really design solutions? And how do we think about solving a problem, and what process do you follow? That we term as design thinking. And across the world, this is the most common definition. And we cannot train our students for every challenge that might come up in life. We cannot train them to study every subject that is out there. We have to give them the ability to learn and do things on their own. And therefore, frameworks are very, very important. And design thinking framework really empowers students to solve a problem, to identify a problem and say, okay, I see this problem. How can I find a solution around it? And it's a very nice, fun, systematic way of solving a problem. So that's in summary, that is the design thinking.
Great. And could you also take us through the basic framework as you spoke about in terms of what are the different parameters or elements in each of this?
So design thinking starts with building empathy or understanding your user. We also say it's a user-centric process. Supposing we are building a table for somebody. If you look at who is it that we're building for, how are they going to use it? Because then you can build a very generic solution. It won't work for the audience that you're building it. So it's a very user-centric approach. So first we start by understanding our user, building empathy. Who are they? What do they want? What are their challenges? And then we define the problem statement. Say, okay, this is my user, and this is what I'm trying to solve for. So you really narrow it down. And then once you have your sort of scope and your problem laid out, you really have to think about ideating. How can I solve this? What are the different ways people have solved this before? And then once you ideate, you might come up with 100 ideas, 200 ideas. Then you sort of narrow it down, fine tune it. And then you start prototyping. So you start testing and prototyping and figuring out, is this solution going to work for my user? So you go back to your user and say, this is what I think. This is the prototype I've built. This is the wireframe I've created. What do you think? Does this work for you? And then you test it. Then you get feedback. Then you improve the prototype. Or maybe the prototype doesn't work at all. Then you go back to your ideation phase. So it's a iterative process. It's a process that goes in loops. But if we follow the process of building empathy, defining the problem, prototyping and testing and ideating, if we were to do it in this manner, in a very systematic manner, the likelihood of us coming up with a solution that is most fit for the audience is very, very high. And so this is the process that is about design thinking.
Fantastic. Normally, when a product is designed, typically a concept is thought about by the designer, and then basically it's a top-down approach.
Correct.
Where the person who is originating or thinking about this is creating the concept and then thrusting it onto the user.
Correct.
Whereas the design thinking concept, what you just explained, seems to be a two-way process. So there's an audience which actually needs a solution, and they are seeking a solution. And the person who is trying to design is actually trying to interact with the audience first to seek, to understand what the solution the audience is trying to seek, and then work on it. And in the process, they are also trying to interact with each other so that an optimal solution is actually created.
The user is very, very important in the design thinking process. We cannot create a solution that is going to be very divorced and removed from reality of the problem that's being faced. For example, I know our school students were working on this larger problem of how do we integrate the elderly into our society. They were just addressing that very large problem. And so they went in and they did photo studies, and they followed their grandparents around to see what do they do during the day, how does their day look. Because you have to really understand your user. If you build something for them, you have to understand them. So there are multiple ways of understanding the user. And one of the projects and solution that was provided came from the insight that the elderly wanted to relive and recreate their memories. And the elderly really care about their memories. There's a very deep insight. So unless you understand your user, you will not come up with an insight. And unless you have an insight, you cannot have a solution. So the insight was they need to recreate memories and protect their memories. So the children, I think they must have been fourth graders. They came up with a memory library. So this is where grandparents and children can go create memories or re-access old memories and photos and videos and really relive those. So unless you understand the user, build an insight, you cannot come with a solution. So this was a real harebrained idea, but I think it's very deep and beautiful thought of a memory library.
I do understand that you are implementing this as part of your curriculum, right from your school as well as onto the university students as well. But in terms of to understand the real life applications, how much of that is actually getting utilized in the real life? I know it is not very easy to really crystallize and say for this sure, but since you are associated with this particular concept for such a long time at an academic level, and I'm sure also you must be contributing to the society at your level as well. So if you can talk about some use cases, some applications where this particular concept has been utilized.
So Mishraji, this is being used in the corporate sector extensively for internal problem solving. It is being used in schools and colleges and universities to build that problem solving muscle in children. So I was exposed to it through the Stanford Design School, which was founded in, I think, 2005 at Stanford, and was founded by industry veterans, and was founded by the leadership of this company called IDEO. And IDEO is known for their absolute innovation. They sort of invented the Apple mouse, for example. They've redesigned fundamental experiences, and they use design thinking to do that. And so this is not a university-led thinking process that leads into the corporate sector. It's what the industry has fed into the education space. And now it's being used in all sectors. So some of the examples, you can see any big organization uses design thinking workshops and trainings for their staff on how do we build a solution, how do we build a product. Product engineers, architects, social service workers, we as educators use it. So it's a universal thinking process. And I think the number of examples of products that have come out of design thinking are many. For example, we are hosting an event called COSE 2023. And at COSE, we are awarding our innovation award to this organization called Bamboo. And what they have built are these thermometers that come onto baby's hands, because the most important thing when a child is born is to make sure the temperature is stable. So we cannot keep going and measuring their temperature. So they have this little watch that goes on to these newborn babies' hands, because infant mortality is affected because of not being able to monitor the right temperature. You don't know if the child is doing well or not, and you're not able to give adequate health care if you don't know. So this simple watch goes on, continuously monitors the temperature and highlights when issues are coming up. So projects like this, there are hundreds and hundreds of projects that are real world application. They went to the design thinking process. Who's my audience? What is the insight? What is the problem? The problem was we couldn't understand the temperature. And what could be the solution? And then to prototype the solution. It should be safe. It should be made of the right kind of plastic or right kind of material. It should last for a long time. It doesn't have to be recharged. So all of this go into the product development phase.
Fantastic. You mentioned in your reply about Apple Mouse. And very coincidentally and the relevant fact here is that Apple comes out with new products every year, almost every year, which are unthinkable and which nobody had thought about before. So it's kind of a contradictory situation in terms of, because Apple as a organization, they try to bring something which is new, which is not known anywhere. Probably they make sure that the users become used to it.
Yes.
So it's quite amazing to know that Apple has used this concept, because they want to stay ahead of the curve with respect to what the user wants.
Absolutely.
So how do you explain this?
So any company that wants to innovate, Mishraji, has to use some level of this process, much deeper, much closer to the user. Unless companies understand their user and go deep into and build insight from the user, they cannot innovate. So, Steve Jobs' understanding of the user and just Apple's understanding of the user's psyche, that this is where they'd like to put the button and this is where they would, what weight should be there and what the touchscreen must do. All of this comes from what the user wants. And even if the user did not know that they wanted, I saw this video where it said they did not even know that the touchscreen had to exist, because the user does not even imagine that something like a touchscreen can exist. So that's where the ideation phase will come, because the insight could be something else, that the keys might get stuck. That might be the insight. The outcome could be touchscreen. I don't know. I'm just taking the example that you stated, but unless we go deep into, we understand the user, understand the issues, understand what they might need, might not need, what they're struggling with, we cannot build solutions for them. So fundamentally, that if you have to do market research, that's why we would do market research to build any new product.
So going on, tell us about how you have included these into your curriculum, because in India, whether it is school system or the university system, I think you have to follow certain government-laid guidelines with respect to how to design your curriculum. So how did you get around this and included these concepts into your curriculum?
So Mishraji, we are a private university, so we have flexibility in how we design our coursework and how our credit system functions. And in the school space, while we're affiliated to CBSEI, CSEI, GCSE, different boards and different schools, we still have the flexibility to design the curriculum and what children learn and when they learn it. So we've been able to incorporate design thinking as a very critical element in all our institutions. In the university, for example, it is part of what we call the Common Core curriculum. Every student, no matter what their specialization, whether they are in the BTech program or BCom program or BSc program, they have to go through either 1 credit, 2 credit, 4 credit of design thinking. So they do, through their entire semester, they would do design thinking challenge. And we have what we call maker spaces where students can actually go and use tools like hand tools, power tools, 3D printing machines, CNC machines, to be able to take their product and build prototypes and build a functioning prototype. Now, an engineering student can definitely do that. So that's how we have incorporated it. In the school, for example, we have included in their science curriculum, computer science curriculum. We do design thinking challenges every year. And you know, what I've seen is more than the product, you know, what they come up with, it is going through the process that they understand this is what is important when I'm solving a problem and I can solve any problem. That confidence is what we need our students to have. And that's what design thinking does for us.
That's very good. So I know that in the school education system, I think we have lakhs of schools in India, and primarily the government schools, basically government-run schools, and probably the CBSE schools are in the range of about 25,000 across India. So since you have been using this concept in your school curriculum, is it a possibility that you could actually become one of the lead in terms of becoming a mentor school for other schools if they are interested to come and learn how you're using them as a concept and take that concept into their schools to adapt?
Sure, Mishraji. I mean, we have released all our videos, our process videos, everything is available online and on our website. We talk a lot about design thinking and design thinking challenges that we've done so far. And I think all students must have access to the ability to problem solve and the confidence to problem solve. I think that's in the K-12 space, that is what we're trying to achieve. And that would be great. The more schools that adapt it, the better. Atal Tinkering Labs that are set up by CBSE schools also hopes to target this space. They want to set up maker spaces in schools, and they fund this. And there are a lot of organizations also that are focusing on similar skills. So I think schools that are really keen and philosophically aligned to solving this kind of problem, resources are plenty, including ours.
Okay.
Yeah.
And since you have been using this in your university space, which is a private university, as you mentioned, so when somebody, any of the industry comes to your campus for the recruitment, is there any special inclination towards those students who might have actually taken up more number of credit with respect to design thinking than the rest?
So what we have seen is our students that have gone deeper into design thinking want to be entrepreneurs. Oh. Because suddenly when you are able to solve a problem and then you're able to do the full cycle and you keep doing that cycle over and over, and you get comfortable with failure, you get comfortable with being in new spaces. So when in CMR Institute of Technology, where we have about 4,000 engineering students, we established the makerspace and introduced design thinking and just that framework. And we realized a lot of the students were hoping to be entrepreneurs because they suddenly felt the confidence to solve problems on their own. And you know, whether they went into a job because they needed it right after, but their entrepreneurial sort of mindset got unlocked. So I believe it's a long-term, long game, but the more you engage with it, the more you feel confident, the easier you're able to stand on your 2 feet.
Okay, that's very interesting. And are you able to, the entrepreneurial mindset, I think today is very important because the way I see it, by 2030, I think most of the jobs will become either contracts or something similar to that. We might be left with only 20-30% of the real jobs in the world. I mean, rest of it will become professional contracts or some kind of entrepreneurship. So this is very important to really inculcate from young age, which is what you are doing it right from the school. So this is really fantastic. So what is your, right now I understand your group is having about 20,000 plus students.
Yes.
But you're geographically right now only concentrating in and around Bangalore area.
Yes, our institution is in Bangalore. We have one institution in Singapore that we started many years ago. But
okay.
It's being run independently.
Okay.
We are concentrated completely in Bangalore.
Okay. So what's the future plan? I mean, how do you see in the next 5 to 7 years in terms of the growth of this organization?
Mishraji, I think for us in the higher education space, we would like to consolidate what we have. And it's very important for us to, you know, all our students and our faculty and the culture of the university to be solidified. You know, when we say we are really passionate about, you know, making a difference in the world and contributing to society, we want our students to embody that fully. And so that is what we're putting all our systems and processes in place for that. So number wise, we will be, you know, hitting about 20,000 only in the higher education space. But more importantly, our students each student will be clocking in a minimum of 15 hours of community service mandatorily per semester, every student.
Fantastic.
So that's the kind of impact that we want our university to do. Every student will have undergone design thinking and using the makerspaces. Every student will be doing courses about knowing themselves and their community and contributing to society. So that is what we are solidifying in the next 5 years. As we continue to grow number-wise, but for us, really the intent of building a university and creating this impact in our ecosystem is very important. In the school space, we are considering whether we expand and to which cities, and if we do, how that would be panning out, or within Bangalore itself, what our schools would look like.
Okay. So tell us about the upcoming event, which you briefly mentioned earlier. But if you can slightly give us a wider perspective about how long you've been doing this event and what exactly is the end objective you're trying to achieve out of this, give a sense of that.
So, Mishraji, the reason we care about design thinking is because we want our students to solve problems and we want them to make a difference in the world. And in the future, any problem that they might face, they should be able to have the confidence to say, I know how to figure this out. So to celebrate this sentiment and this philosophy, we have Design Thinking Day every year. So this year, we are launching this event called CAUSE 2023. It's going to be an annual event. And CAUSE is to have a cause, to fight for a cause, to work towards a cause, And we're working with the United Nations sustainability goals. And, you know, we want students to find solutions for all of the areas of concern. And we've opened it out as an international competition where students are submitting their design thinking projects, solving a real problem. And we've received, you know, I would say 700 applications and registrations, and we're going to shortlist it. And there's going to be a final, what we're calling the ground zero, like a shark tank of design thinking in front of a panel. For anybody that is working towards a cause and have used design thinking to solve a problem and for a good cause. So it's on 17th of March, and we're hoping that really ignites this ability and the intention to solve a problem and work towards the cause. Yeah.
And these entries you got from across India or across the
Across the world, across India, we've got across schools, colleges, but also we've got participation from multiple countries. I think about 11 different countries right now. So we're shortlisting, we're going through the shortlisting process. So very, very interesting projects have come up. So we want to really celebrate, you know, students have to solve the problem tomorrow. Our students that are in the classroom today are the ones that are going to be leading the world tomorrow. And we have to solve the biggest problems. So that is the intention.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the biggest opportunity I think we have for these young children who are right now in the 7th, 8th or 9th, 10th grade, by the time 20, 30, 20, 40, 20, 50 comes, I think we'll have 1 billion extra people on this earth. And that's going to throw up a lot of basic challenges in terms of, you know, the basic human needs like food, clothes, health, education, entertainment, and so on and so forth. I think the young children of today, if they are able to solve these opportunity areas for the world, I think they will do a lot of good to the world as well as also create a fantastic career for themselves.
Exactly. Exactly, Mishraji. We cannot teach them everything there is to know about life and the world. We just can give them tools and sort of the playground and the sandbox to do it themselves. We can only give them the opportunity and experience to do it. Every subject cannot be taught and every topic cannot be taught. So we can only give them tools.
Okay. And in the recent times, there has been a lot of inclination for good, brilliant students to really move from core technical subjects to towards more subjects like humanities, liberal education and so on and so forth. So do you see that in your education system as well?
The way the NEP is also structured and the way we are moving forward in the higher education space is the what we call the CBCS system, choice-based credit system, where in fact students are encouraged not to be in their silos. If you're an engineering student, you should know a little bit of law. You can, you know, go into the design space. So there's a lot of interdisciplinary, cross-disciplinary opportunities that are there. And in the school space, I can definitely say that more than this, before we had only science and everybody sort of went towards that, humanities, commerce, design, all of these fields are gaining momentum, gaining acceptance. Parents are open to it. Students are open to it. Students are more mature and understand that these are the different career options that I will have, and this is how I can get to it. So definitely the scene is changing rapidly.
Okay, very good. So NEP, of course, the concepts are very good, actually. But then in terms of implementation, how do you see? Is there any administrative lags which you are still seeing because you are still controlled by the boards like CBSE, ICSE and others, which are in turn controlled by the government? So How is the implementation going?
So I think the NEP, you're right, is a document that is very progressive in its intention, and the bar is very high. And I can say that as a private organization, private institution, it gives us a lot of freedom, and it gives us a lot of it supports us when we're talking to parents and talking to teachers and the entire ecosystem. I say it validates what innovation we want to do, because the document itself is so innovative and progressive. But as an entire country, for us to be able to implement a system like the NEP, yes, there will be a lot of administrative challenges, because as a country, we are so large. We cannot do without a document like this. This is the best step forward. And so it's giving us sort of the space to innovate. And from there, we have to take it forward. And no innovation and no advancement is easy. There is a lot of pain in that and a lot of challenges. I think we're in the right direction for something like NEP, because it for us in the K-12, in the school space, and a lot of the things that we implemented many years ago, because we redid our curriculum many years ago. And now when we have to tell parents and they say, why did you do this? But NEP is already talking about it. So it gives us a lot of,
leverage.
Yes. And also just speaking about, say, ICSE, CBSE boards. These boards also are exam bodies, as I see them. They're exam bodies. They tell grade 10, this is the exam I will do. Grade 12, this is the exam I will do. They are sort of a gatekeeper. They're a gatekeeper organization. They've also said, okay, you can teach this in this grade, and this is the kind of textbook that you can use. But they've not limited us. These boards also are very, different schools can follow different systems. They'll say at the end in grade 10, make your child do this. Don't go low. Don't go below the bar we have set.
Okay.
But they've never said do not go above the bar we have set. Okay. So up to each school, each organization, each head of school, each principal, if you want to innovate, if you want to give something to your children that's not there, we should, we can. And nobody has held us back.
Okay. Now, coming on to my last question. So, obviously, you are, as you mentioned, you are right now in Bangalore. Your K-12 schools are there. Yes. Your university is there. So, anybody, any of your viewers or listeners who are watching us or listening to this, if they want to take up, a vocational kind of a course on design thinking, how can they utilize your system? Is there a possibility of something they could do online?
We don't have anything online at the moment, but we will be offering certification programs from the Common Core curriculum where students can do design thinking. But our university and our makerspace, we are going to be inaugurating a 10,000 square foot makerspace on 17th of March. It's going to be one of its kind. So we welcome everybody to come and see the space, and they would want to use it. We would, if somebody's innovating and building something for the good of society, we would love to allow our students to interact with them, and the industry folks to come in and interact with our students. I think we cannot make this world a better place if all of this, these barriers are removed and we seamlessly work together. So, our university, we are a 75-acre campus by the lakeside, and we're going to have multiple maker spaces. This is the first one getting inaugurated. Be happy for students to come and do their certification programs with us.
Fantastic. Yeah. So, Dr. Trista, so thank you so much to invest time in your and really sharing all the thoughts about design thinking and all the associated subjects which you just spoke. I know it is an exciting space. A lot of innovation is happening, and I'm sure a lot will happen as we move along. But you and CMR group and your school, I think, doing fantastic work in this space. So I really wish all of you great success for the upcoming event as well as for the years to come on your endeavor. Thank you so much to be part of our conversation today.
Thank you. We love talking about this, and we hope more and more students and institutions adapt, adopt, and take this forward, because we really think it is the future of the way children and students must be thinking about the world. So thank you for giving us this opportunity to share with you and your audience. So Mishraji, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Hope you enjoy this episode. We sincerely wish you could take something from our conversation today and be able to apply it to your life in a positive way. We value your feedback. This can help us improve our future episodes. So share your thoughts to serve you better. If you want us to focus on a topic which you think is of importance, let us know. We will share our expertise in future episodes. So, see you soon with a new topic and help you in your career journey.